For every year of income you have in a separate asset like that, in the business we call it a volatility buffer. If every year you have of income in one of those plans, you can take about 10% more income off of your investment portfolio with the same level of historical safety.
Financial independence,
freedom,
financial picture,
independent financially,
financial future,
financial freedom and wealth,
financial independence,
get your fill, financial independence and long life. Welcome back to Get Your Fill, Financial Independence and Long Life, where we explore ways to achieve those two goals. And we invite people on to help us who can really like set the tone, set the bar, let us know, are we successful or not? That is why I'm so excited that Tom Wall is with us today. Tom is an author, speaker, and he's a coach to financial advisors. He's also a thought leader in retirement income planning. He takes a protection first approach, which he believes is required for people to feel comfortable spending and enjoying their wealth accumulate over a lifetime. His book, Permission to Spend, illuminates the strategies and formulas that drive financial independence. Tom, thanks for being with us today.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me on, Christine.
So I know even though it's not retirement, I think a lot of people who are thinking about starting their own business and leaving their day job struggle with that, those same sort of questions, right? Do I have enough? Is it okay?
Yeah, I think they go hand in hand. I mean, retirement is almost a dated word these days. It's really about financial independence and kind of defining what you want that to be with, part-time jobs and remote opportunities more and more available. I think the traditional start-stop is over.
Yeah, I know. As the longer we live, like how many years can you really just sit around and play golf or whatever, like, yeah, I like golf, but like, it's not really like a lifestyle. I have to do other stuff, right? And we're healthier. So absolutely.
Exactly.
So that is the question, right? How do you know? And no matter what it is, like if you want to let go of your security and let go of that steady income stream that at least you believe is going to keep coming as long as you want it to, like what are some guideposts or what are some, I don't know, like what are some ways that we can know, yes, okay, you'll be all right. You can live for X amount of time, because I know that's a lot of people's retirement plan, right? I'm just going to die when I run out of money because.
Yeah, probably not the best plan because it's pretty catastrophic if you run out of money at 80 years old.
Right.
Well, I think there's a couple different questions here. I know we're kind of talking about financial independence and going out on your own and potentially becoming an entrepreneur. I've done all of those things. My background is about 20 years, 21 years now in the financial services industry as an advisor and a coach, thought leader, mentor to advisors, focused on protection planning and really where that comes from. And where it was the genesis of my book called Permission to Spend, with a subtitle, Maximize Your Retirement with the Best Kept Secret in Personal Finance. What that best kept secret is everyone kind of knows you need to save, you need to invest. I think the people that have studied a little bit understand how do you asset allocate and invest in stocks and bonds and things like that. But the problem, why people are still so nervous, even the good savers, are they're not sure how long it's going to last. They're not sure if they're going to, experience a major market crash, a Great Depression Part Two. God forbid, World War breaks out or more likely, long-term care events where expensive care is needed, longevities are expanding. So making that money last is the big question. And I think for retirees, and we can move to people that are pre-retirement, but for retirees, the issue is you get to retirement and even if you've saved up, millions of dollars, you're not sure how much you can spend because you don't know how much longer you have or if there's going to be major expenses.
Right.
So I think a big part of that planning is not so much how much, it's, do we have guarantees in place to know that, worst case scenario, we have some level of income going on versus just this volatile bucket of money that could change in value on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, when you said that, the thing that pops into my mind is real estate, because I'm a real estate broker, I'm a real estate investor. Like that's my thing. I believe that that's a way to have that passive income stream without worrying about what the market's dipping and not dipping and who got, what CEO got arrested and whose stock just went into the, that happened with a stock I had, right? It was one of those hot tips. Oh, you got to buy the stock. And then the guy got arrested for his third DUI and that company stock went down to like 15 cents. I'm like, why did I listen to this person? But anyway,
oh gosh, yeah.
Right. So how can we do it? I mean, what are some tips or tricks or secrets or, right? There has to be some, there's some way, right, that you're teaching people how to do these things.
Yeah. So I think, you know, on the retirement side, you know, a big part of it is guarantees. So, you know, you look at just an investment portfolio, you know, whatever that number is, and it's moving around. You know, there's actually this study that was done. It's hard to believe it was 30 years ago, but a lot of people that have read about retirement planning have heard of something called the 4% rule.
Yeah.
And what that comes from is it's not so much that that's a rule. It's just that if you look back over the last 100 years, the worst period of time for a portfolio to last 30 years dictated that you had to spend less than 4%, or put differently, if you started with 4% of $1 million portfolio, like $40,000 of income,
yeah,
you could increase it with actual inflation every year for 30 years and spend your last dollar on your last day of 30 years. So it wasn't necessarily a recommendation. It was really just kind of a study of what it looked like to spend money out of volatile portfolios.
Yeah.
But that said, that was the worst case scenario. 99% of the time, you would have been just making more money and getting richer in retirement, which sounds good, but that's not why you saved in those retirement accounts. You saved it so you could actually spend and enjoy it.
Exactly.
And the reason, and really, if all you have is an investment portfolio, you really have no choice, if you're a prudent, responsible person, to live to that 4% rule, because all those bad things could happen. And you essentially have to act like your own insurance company with this like hoarding wealth just in case.
Yeah.
But the most likely event is those bad things aren't going to happen. So there's ways with insurance. You know, insurance can be a dirty word for some people, but it gives us the ability to spend. So with, you know, permanent life insurance policies that have amazing tax advantages on the cash value buildup, you can actually guarantee legacies to, you know, your spouse, to at the very least you're probably obligated to. But for most people that have accumulated some money, they may want to leave some money to their children, church, charity. It can guarantee that legacy. But also with some creative planning, you can actually build them in a way where it provides additional funds, not your money, for long-term care expenses, but also provide a accessible pool of cash in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, or whatever the size policy is, that you can access outside of your investment portfolio. So while markets are crashing or while markets are volatile, you have another source of income. And the studies have shown, I've actually done my own research and paid some data scientists to crunch these numbers for me. You know, for every year of income you have in a separate asset like that, in the business, we call it a volatility buffer. If, you know, every year you have of income in one of those plans, you can take about 10% more income off of your investment portfolio with the same level of historical safety.
Wow.
So it really, it's not so much that it gets you wealthier, you know, you're going to have similar returns that you can do elsewhere. But because of the insurance benefits and the risk pooling, you really, it gives you permission to spend, which is why I wrote the book and called it that. It allows you to have that freedom, knowing that those obligations and wishes are funded, at least at some level.
So when I think about insurance related, especially like something that's along the life insurance vein, I think that's something you should get when you're extremely young, right? You're not going to recommend this to someone who's already 50 or 60 years old. Is that true?
I would disagree with that. I mean, it's just like real estate. The younger you can start, the better off you are. It's like compound interest. And to be blunt, the older you are, the closer you are to death. Therefore, you know, your charges inside the policy will be higher.
Yeah.
But I would say it works really at any age. It's just as you shift into your 60s and 70s, there's less years to build up that big pot of cash. So yeah, it turns into more of a legacy concern than an actual asset. But yeah, I mean, I started funding these policies heavily in my 20s. And I haven't had a savings account. I haven't had $1 in a savings account for 15 years because my cash is growing at 5-ish% riskless and taxless. So yeah, why would I?
Right.
That's kind of the power of it. Yeah.
So I have to ask, because you're not old, right? So when you, a lot of times when I speak to financial planners, you know, they're silver haired and they've been doing this for 100 years, but because they didn't discover or think about, or recognize, I guess, the power of understanding money at a young age. But it looks like you have, like you just came right out of the gate saying, all right, I want money. I got to understand how it works. Let's go. I mean, how did you get started in financial planning?
That's a great question. So I actually was recruited by one of the big mutual insurance companies while I was in college at 21 years old, and signed up for their internship program. And it was basically a sales job. I mean, the idea was, you know, calling on friends and family to start and, you know, asking them about their finances and basically selling insurance and investments during that period of time. And my goal was kind of when I joined, I said, you know, I'm either going to be successful at this, but even if I fail, I'm going to learn so much about money in the process that I'll just be better off long term. So that's kind of how I got started. And then over time, I started to realize that, you know, the investment world's kind of a commodity. I mean, if you really study hard, you can kind of do it yourself online. You can set up your E-Trade account and you know, do it all yourself. Yeah. Same thing with kind of the cheap insurance, like the cheap term insurance and stuff. You can kind of do it yourself if you play online. But what I really got enamored with was some of these long-term strategies, these permanent life insurance policies that I discovered that the middle class and above, and frankly, the wealthy use as a way to shelter money from the IRS, but also put, you know, legacy planning in place that spans generations. And that's really where I focused the rest of my career on.
Is that because you have to be at least middle class or, I mean, middle income or above in order to afford something like that? Or is it just a knowledge issue?
Not at all. I mean, it works for anybody. It's just the more you pay in taxes, the sexier that becomes, because basically when the money goes in, if you do it right, you'll never pay taxes ever again on any of the growth. So for people that aren't paying a lot of taxes, okay. But it's kind of like the municipal bond, if you've ever heard of that market. Like, municipal bonds aren't taxed. Usually the middle class and below don't even play with that because it's not a big tax break. But wealthier classes, absolutely, you know, heavily invest in that stuff because they're getting taxed at the highest possible rates.
Yeah, I used to work at the IRS, actually, and I remember processing a tax return, and the check the person had written to the IRS was for $1 million. And I was like, wow, someone's paying $1 million in taxes. Oh, my God. So I had to, you know, look through the return, but they had actually made $7 million. So that's pretty good, yeah. Right? You pay $1 million in taxes and you made $7 million. That's a lot less in taxes, you know, statistically or percentage wise than the majority of people who aren't that rich are paying.
That's what I jokingly say. It's a good problem to be paying a lot of taxes. That means you're making a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly. But if you can sneak away from that.
Right.
So I don't know how many people really understand these things like permanent life insurance. It's a phrase that I think you don't bandy about at your local bar. So can you sort of give us a, you know, 50,000 mile view of exactly how that would work for someone?
Yeah. So, I mean, my favorite, and basically because it's guaranteed, there's a lot of different flavors of it that, you know, try to do a lot of different things. But at its core, you know, permanent life insurance can have premiums that are 10 to 20 times what you'd pay for like a cheap term policy. Term insurance is like renting insurance. So you buy $1 million policy for your family and maybe you pay $100 a month or something like that. And it's kind of what you have to do if you have dependents and people depending on you and your income. Like, if you're responsible and love them, you kind of have to at least do that. But in most cases, you know, 99% of the time, you're going to outlive that 20-year term or whatever it is, and all of those premiums are gone forever. Kind of like if you buy car insurance and never crash into anything, you never collect. With whole life insurance, especially with the big mutual carriers, and I qualify it because there's really only a handful of really great big carriers, you know, Fortune 100, you know, style companies that I would probably consider, you know, when you buy into those policies, they don't pay out if you die, they pay out when you die. So it's if you buy that $1 million policy, you know, I bought mine at 28 years old. If I, you know, if I died at 28 or if I die at 88, it will pay a death claim. The difference there, though, and the reason the premium is so much higher is A, because they know they're going to have to pay that $1 million. But along the way, it also builds cash value. So usually by around year 10 to 12, you've actually got all the money you've paid in cash value. So if you've paid in $100,000, you'll have $100,000 in cash value. You can access, there's no 59 and a half rules like a retirement plan. It's not tied up for some future date. It's accessible and growing. And it ends up growing at rates like cash and bonds. You know, a very predictable 4, 5, 6% over time. And that's the piece of the portfolio for me, if it fits into and allows me to, you know, invest more aggressively elsewhere. But the biggest thing of all is it's guaranteed to go up in value every single year. The only question is how fast. That's big. Obviously, there's the insurance protection. So we've got guarantees. I think people really overlook the value of guarantees inside of their portfolio.
Yeah.
The biggest thing of all is, you know, it's because of the taxation or the non-taxation of it. It's one of the last great places where you can park money really on an unlimited level. It's not like Roth IRAs where there's contribution limits or anything like that. You can really, at an unlimited level, put it in this, have it compound over the course of your life, and it eventually pays out as a death benefit, income tax free. So you could 10x your money and not pay the IRS a penny on any of that over the course of your entire life. And that's kind of where it fits. It's a conservative, safe. I jokingly say it's the best boring money can buy. You know, if every prudent portfolio needs some stable, accessible, boring piece of cash that you know is there, because that's what gives you the guts to go invest in real estate and invest in equities and start your own business. And this is truly one of the best places to put your money for that kind of funds.
So you talked about it being accessible, but we didn't really talk too much about how that could work. So people have this $100,000 value in their life insurance. How can they actually use that?
Yeah, so it's a funny
without
thing.
Without dying, of course.
Well, you can actually take the money out. So when you buy these policies, they pay something called policy dividends. And this is why I say only one of the handful of big mutuals that are out there is where you should buy it from. These mutual companies, they're owned by their policy owners. That's what the word mutual means. There's no stockholders, no fat cat stockholders that are requesting their quarterly dividends like you'd see on any other publicly traded company. So every year that, they collect these premiums, they collect these premiums based on guarantees, but when things work out better than assumed, so better than the guarantee, meaning they earn more money in their general investment account, or mortality wasn't the worst case scenario, or expenses weren't the worst case scenario, they pay that back to their policy owners in the form of a dividend. And that's really what drives a lot of the long-term growth. So you can take those dividends in cash every year. You can in the future, most of the time they let them accumulate in the policy, but you can access them later on. And you don't pay a dime of taxes on that withdrawal until you reach your cost basis, which is the sum of all your premiums that you've paid. But there's also this interesting provision that's really unique to life insurance, which is called a policy loan. And it sounds terrible borrowing against your own money, but it's actually the trick that allows you to get the money out of the plan, even if you're way above what you've paid in, income tax free, because the IRS does not tax policy loans. So, a lot of times we see retirees who've been paying into these for decades. You know, they've got hundreds of thousands of dollars, or maybe we'll just make up a number. They've paid in $200,000, but they've got $500,000. They can actually access that entire amount through policy loans without paying a dime of taxes. And as long as they manage it, typically that loan interest rate is similar to the rate at which the policy is growing. So as long as they kind of manage that and keep an eye on it, you can do very well. And then that death benefit kind of forgives that loan essentially upon your death. It's really one of the best kept secrets in personal finance, because it's misunderstood by a lot of folks. But in my travels, I mean, I'm on stages once a week now, speaking to thousands of advisors across the country. Very few of them really understand that. The majority of the financial planning world is just asset gatherers. They're just trying to help you accumulate funds. They'll roll over your 401k, but they don't do a lot of that forward thinking, retirement planning.
Would this be the kind of thing that would make sense to buy for a child? So, when you, instead of like we used to buy savings bonds for kids and stuff like that, would it make more sense to say, I'm assuming that the premiums get higher the later in life that you actually take out the policy. Is that true?
They do. And it's less about premium. It's more about compounding. So I bought policies on both of my boys. I have two boys, age 13 and 10. And, bought them policies when they were 1 year old. And, it wasn't about the life insurance piece. I wasn't looking to profit from their death, or if they died, it wouldn't be a financial hardship. It was more like, I just wanted to create their financial backbone. I wanted them to get started so young in this policy so that when they get into their 20s and 30s, they're not focused on paying down student debt, and they're not focused on, building up an emergency fund and then starting in all those things like real estate, business interests and equities, yeah, and things that generate wealth. There's no age too young. Once a child is 2 weeks old, they'll usually issue a contract, and that's a great time to do it.
And that's so powerful. Like you say, it's kids starting their life with student loan debt and all kinds of crap and burdens and, how am I going to pay for my books and my tuition? He's just like, oh, I'll just take out a loan for my life insurance. No problem.
Absolutely. And we didn't talk a lot before this, but I think your audience might be interested in my transition to this author speaker role.
Yes.
I can talk a little bit about that too. So when it comes to financial independence, you know, I'm not financially independent, but I talked to a lot of folks about, and they get very interested when I start telling my story, that I spent 4 years as an advisor myself, but then I spent the subsequent 13 years in a big mutual life insurance company's home office, and was very well paid to do it. I was traveling in sales. Toward the end, I got so good at telling that sales story that I had actually ended up running their marketing division and managing their team of content specialists that were putting out the marketing material. And I was paid well. I mean, it was the kind of job where I could have just kind of coasted for the next 20 years and retired with a pretty nice sum of money and not had a lot of stress along the way. But as I think a lot of your listeners are feeling, is there's this pull toward doing more. Like there's this pull toward, you know, working for somebody else and kind of helping the company's mission versus, you know, telling your own story and actually deliver and actually achieving the value that you know that you're worth.
Yeah.
And I felt that pull very often in my job. In fact, every time I was asked to go outside my sales region and go, you know, give a talk across the country, it was at the same time flattering. And at the same time, it hurt. Like, oh, I am that valuable that I'm just, I could do so much more on my own. People are telling me I'm that valuable. But, you know, it's hard to leave when you have that security blanket of that job. And, you know, you're supporting a four-person family with that salary. So all that said, about 3 years ago, I had enough. And I made the decision that, you know, I'm now 42. And I'm getting to the point in my life where if I'm going to make this leap and I'm going to go do that, it's time to do that. You know, I'm not old yet. I got plenty of years ahead, but why not do it now? And frankly, it was right after a divorce. You know, my finances were already kind of up in the air and in shambles. So I said, why not just push all the chips in now and do the thing? So some people think I was extra crazy because of that, you know, but you know, that's usually when people are seeking security. So I went out on my own, and basically I finished my doctorate, and I wrote the book that I wrote the introduction to that book 6 years prior. It had just been sitting there in my notes file. Just I knew I wanted to write it, but I finally got it done, and built a company that was, you know, actually coaching advisors and speaking to advisors and giving, you know, keynote talks based on all those years of expertise. So I say that just to say, I think, you know, your audience probably has their own expertise. They have their own background, their own, everyone has their superpower, I call it. There's something that they know more about than anybody else, or something that they're more passionate about than anybody else. Or you just ask them the right questions, their face will light up like nobody else. And I think that's the kind of thing where, you know, you can think about how do you build a business around that creatively in today's world? And I think a lot of people can.
And it's, if you already have some, so you had some, your name was out there, but just within your own company, but it's still daunting, right? It's still, you think, okay, how am I going to convince everybody else that I'm really great at this and I'm an expert when they haven't ever heard me speak before and they don't know who I am? And, you know, what am I, how do I get started with this brand new profession? And what was your path? I mean, how did you sort of say, okay, this is how I'm going to get the word out?
It's a great question. So I had a little bit of the luxury of, you know, being with this major mutual life insurance company for a long time. So a lot of the firm presidents around the country knew me. And my business was to charge a fee to speak to them about this, but also then convince them to join my mastermind group where I'm going to do coaching and development, which is no small task. I mean, to get people to actually part with money to do that kind of thing is no small feat. And it was a grind. Honestly, this is my advice to lots of folks, is if you have, there's probably a way where you can do both. So for me, you know, I had the realities of, you know, large child support payments that had to get paid, and my finances were half of what they were just a year prior. So I basically called a friend of mine who was a firm leader and said, hey, I have this expertise in life insurance. I know it like nobody else. Let me be your life insurance specialist. Pay me a salary. and, you know, it'll be less than I'm making right now at this big Fortune 100 company, but it'll be enough to make sure that I know my bills are paid. And then what I'm going to do on the side is I'm going to go start this thing. And I'll actually cut you in on some of the profitability of that early on, so that, you know, so you're kind of taking a bet on me while I'm taking a bet on you. I would bet most of us have an opportunity like that. I think some people think of start and stop. It's like, I have this big job and then I have nothing. And in reality, you can probably make this work by being underemployed. Underemployed meaning, you know, if you're worth $100,000 a year, you know, go work for 50 or 60 in a place that would allow you to moonlight and kind of start this on the side. You might not have a friend like I had, but there are plenty of opportunities out there where you can do that kind of thing.
That's a great point and a great idea. I think that, do you find that not only are you, you know, sort of going back to what you were saying, it's tough to get people to part with their money to become, to be coached and to be better at their job, but it's also, especially I'm thinking that you're speaking to people who already think they're experts. And do they even realize that they don't, you know, that they could be better, that there are things they don't know? Did you find that a little challenging?
I do find that challenging. You know, my audience is in the sales world. So these are financial advisors who ultimately get paid to sell financial plans or sell financial products and things like that. So they're always looking for new language and new ideas. And I think that's universal in any industry. I mean, even if you're coaching people on their health, they're looking for the new hack. They're looking for the new piece of information.
Yeah.
I know I am. I'm in all those groups and stuff like that. And every day I'm buying some new supplement that probably does nothing. but so there's a whole world out there. So it really depends on what you're at. But I really think is don't be the generalist. There's so many coaches and generalists and mindset and whatever your industry is. There's so many generalists out there. Pick the one thing that you are, just get deep into a niche. So my mastermind is called Whole Life Masterminds. My talk is on whole life insurance from participating whole life insurance carriers, which they're massive companies, but it's still a small subset of a much bigger industry.
Yeah.
So I'm very niche focused, and I targeted, you know, these firm presidents who are highly compensated and highly motivated to have their field force be positioning this product for these big mutuals. So my market is big, but it is still finite. It is this group of folks. And they say there's riches and niches. I think that's what I would focus on is, you know, if you have this niche expertise and you want to be a coach, what specific result can you drive? And that's who you target. Like, that's how you go after it. And then, you know, just not to be too long-winded, but then you can expand from there. Once you have that little core group, then you can expand from there. Just like I started with this specific product set, I knew it better than anybody else. I could talk about it better than anybody else. But 3 years into it, I'm already starting to work in more broad sales language, more mindset and motivation stuff. And I could see myself actually morphing over the next 5 years into a speaker that could be on any stage for any company. So I think in any niche, that's a great way to start. And then you can choose how to expand.
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually had a friend who all he did was help firemen with financial planning.
Yeah.
Like to get their budget. Like that was his whole thing. He only spoke to people and in the state of New York. So that, talk about a finite market, but that is still, if you're the best, so how do I refer you? Well, if you're a fireman who works in New York, you need to talk to me. It's so easy, right? Instead of saying, I hear people all the time say, oh, I can talk to anyone. I can help anyone. Well, so am I going to send you every person I meet, right? You can't, there's no, it's not easy to match you up with someone if you don't know exactly, you know, if the pool is so large, it's just meaningless.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. So did you learn, did you know that instinctively, or did you just kind of, did you learn it or hear it somewhere? Or how did you come upon that knowledge?
Oh gosh, 20 years in the sales world, I'm just kind of a self-help junkie with all these, you know, with books and audiobooks and stuff. I kind of knew that was the path, but it's just, you know, I think most people probably have that. It was when you do something enough or you work in a space long enough, you get feedback. And sometimes no feedback is feedback. If nobody's, you know, hooting and hollering about after your talk, then they probably didn't love it all that much.
Yeah.
I have, most people don't give negative feedback. They just give no feedback. Yeah. So, but on the other hand, if, you know, people are saying, wow, that was really cool. Or wow, you really know a lot about this stuff. Or wow, you're more passionate about this than I've ever seen. Like that's how you kind of highlight what that superpower is. And I just knew instinctively, like that was how I was going to carve myself out. You know, I was not an advisor with 30 years of experience and, you know, 10 billion under management or something like that. I didn't have that track record. But I did have this very specific niche that, you know, I knew better than anybody else. So I leaned into that.
Nice. What's your favorite part of what you do now?
I just love that every day is different. You know, the truth is I don't think I've ever in my life worked as hard as I am right now in terms of the amount of hours per day and the number of emails that come in. I also have this weight on my shoulders for the last 3 years, like this stress. But the funny thing is it's a good stress. I actually heard a quote one time, I'm trying to remember what it was. I can't remember what it was, but basically the gist of it was, you know, stress when you're doing something you love is called passion, but stress when you're doing something, you know, that you're not doing is called stress. So I think, you know, it's a funny scenario, but you know, what I love the most is I get to travel the country. So I'm on an airplane probably every week on average. So there's like seasonal talks that I give, but I think I've been in 20 cities this year so far. It's not even March.
Wow.
Which is really fun for me. It's exhausting at times, and I definitely need more help or more staff. But that's been a lot of fun for me. But I think the calling your own shots and the excitement of every day you're solving a new puzzle and how do I make this thing grow? And you know, I think I've been a student of digital marketing for the last 3 years. It's a whole new field for me, but it's fascinating how people are, you know, literally building overnight. I'll never say the word overnight. But they're building these success stories in ways that just were not available even 5 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't doing a whatever paper marketing and all that stuff. You just can't, you can never have the reach, or you could never afford to have the reach for, right. You can do nothing. I talked to a person, one of the early people I interviewed for the podcast. She did talk about a specialty. All she did was that, you know, the tattoo, when they tattoo your body parts, like, I don't know what you call it, permanent makeup. It's permanent makeup. So that was her thing. She did permanent makeup, and she had built her entire career just through Instagram. And she said, you know, my friends, they had to unfriend me because they can't stand that I'm constantly putting stuff up there. But that's, you know, for nothing, for no money, you can just get your word out there and reach potentially the world if you know what you're doing, which is the hard part.
It's true. It's true. And that's a great point. I would tell anybody, you know, if you are going out on your own, stop caring what people think. Stop caring. I can tell you, I started posting a lot of content. A lot of it was on whole life insurance. You can imagine how many of my followers or connections wanted to see those posts. Nobody. What was it really interesting is I got a passionate handful that reached out and became closer friends, and they became my advocates. And actually, I had some friends come out of the woodwork. Like, and when I say friends, I'm talking about someone I knew in high school 20 years ago, 5 years ago. I guess I'm getting older. I haven't seen them since then. But they're like, "Hey, Tom, you know, could you help me with this? Because this is actually something I'm wrestling with." And you know what? The ones that unfriend you weren't your friends anyway.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people get stuck in what are people are going to think or say about me, but the truth is it comes from a place of their own insecurity that they're not out there trying big things and doing big things, and that you have the guts to do it. So I would just, you know, reiterate that and encourage people, you know, get that out of your mind. Who cares what people think? Especially as I get older, I care less and less, because, you know, they're
one of the gifts of age.
If they care, they're not my people.
Right, exactly. But it's true. Going back to what you were saying before, though, you're not talking to it like, "Hey, buy my stuff, buy my stuff." You have a passion for something that you know can help people, and that's the way that you're. That's the way you're like, you know, I put lots of information out there for people. Well, I'm not just saying, you know, "Hey, I'm a great realtor. Use me. I'll help you." No, you're saying, "Hey, here's some tips for this, and this is something you should know. And I know how this can help you." So that's why I want to just make sure that you really understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. Gary V calls it, you know, jab, 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 right hook. It's like deliver value, deliver value, deliver value. And then, you know, one out of every four or five posts, just be like, "Hey, and by the way, I can help you with this. You know, here's how we connect."
Yeah.
And that's a very effective way to not be annoying, and deliver a lot of value along the way, but still let them know, "Hey, if you want to work together, this is how we do it."
Yeah. So now, who's the right person for me to say to you, here's someone you should talk to? I mean, what if I were to make an introduction for you, to you, to someone, what kind of person would you want to meet?
For my specific business?
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking to work with leaders of financial services firms. So typically, you know, a firm president or a firm vice president who, you know, manages a field of financial advisors. I think that's probably the best referral for me. You know, I've had some really great success. I mean, I think our mastermind is approaching 1,000 members now. It's not all individual. I would say only, you know, 10 to 15% of that are individuals. The rest are actually entire firms that have come on board and embraced, you know, the training and the coaching that we're doing.
Fantastic.
Where, you know, for a discount, they'll basically offer it to everybody. So those are the folks that I want to meet, because that's how I magnify my impact as fast as possible. I love working with individuals, but it's quite the grind to, you know, to enroll individuals when you can go to entire firms. But that said, if there are financial advisors that are working in the space, and they're looking to improve, that's what we do. We help them with the right language and tips and skill sets to talk to clients in ways that motivate them to act and grow.
Excellent. But your book is more geared toward the end user, correct?
Yeah, I wrote that really where the book came from was as a tool. You know, and it's funny, and you'd think that there was a ton of material, but in my niche, in this permanent life insurance space, there actually is not a lot of good third party material that talks about it. And sometimes there's a lot of material that talks unfavorably about it, because it is one of the most misunderstood assets. And there's a lot of flavors that you probably shouldn't buy that aren't that great. So I just wanted to give a book that advisors could hand to their clients, which is basically retirement planning 101, start to finish. These are all the concepts. But ends with, you know, the concept of we need to put guarantees in place, or else you'll never feel comfortable spending your money, no matter how much you're able to accumulate. So that's where the book came from, is it was really meant to be a tool for clients that advisors could use.
Yeah, it seems it's the more I learn about this type of insurance, the more interesting it is to me. And I don't understand why everybody doesn't love it and know about it and talk about it and have part of this. It's interesting.
Well, yeah, to be honest, you have to have someone take your blood and urine and ask you a lot of uncomfortable health questions to get it. You know, it is definitely written. That's definitely a hurdle. But, you know, if you're healthy, that's not a big deal. The other one is patience. You know, these plans, it's like I said, it'll be sometimes as much as a decade before you break even on your cash value. So you really have to be a bigger thinker. You have to think about your overall financial plan. You have to be working today for your future you. Not just what your balance sheet says today. And if you can have that long vision and, you know, be thinking about, you know, future you 10, 20 years down the road or longer, since, you know, this is permanent, then I think those are the folks that really lean into it and understand it and get behind it. But most people just aren't in that mindset, or maybe just financially can't be. Maybe they're just, you know, they're just not as well healed.
Maybe. I don't know. I think a lot of it is ignorance, just not being aware of what your options are and listening to people who are also not that aware of what your options are, right? They're interested in selling this specific product or this specific label and not thinking about, not even realizing that they're not giving you the full picture.
Oh, I think ignorance is a big part of it. You know, I jokingly say that, you know, with this specific product and these strategies, it's all about where you're born in the business for financial advisors. You know, if you're born into an investment house, all you're going to talk about is investments. Just like, you know, if you're born into the real estate world, real estate is your favorite investment for life. Everything else is terrible. You know, if you're born into the insurance world, like I was, I mean, I was heavily, you know, compensated to sell lots of life insurance, and they taught me all the ways to sell it and talk about it. And frankly, that's why I left being an advisor, because it felt icky. It felt salesy. I'm too honorable of a person and academic thinking to be that way. But what it drove me toward was a career of studying this stuff and figuring out, is this just a good sales pitch, or is it actually that good? And I got so much confidence and conviction in that process that I started my own company around it in that space. So yeah, it's a journey.
But it's a journey that it's fun, right? And happy and wonderful, and you help people, so
I would recommend it to anybody. I really would. I think And I think the formula for most people, you know, everyone's got different opportunities. Some people might have enough wealth where they can just leave their job and try this for a couple of years, but it will take time. Overnight successes are usually more like a hockey stick where where you earn nothing for a long time. And then all of a sudden, you know, that overnight success happens 3 years in the making. I look at my own business. I didn't take a salary from my business for 18 months. I actually forwarded the entirety of my salary to my one full-time staff person that I hired on day one to help me build this out, put the websites together, fix all the issues with GoDaddy and domains and all the stuff that would happen along the way. And then, you know, just 18 months later, started paying myself a little bit just to survive. And, you know, even now it's not a lot of money, but it's starting to really move. So first of all, have that mindset. If you can have a safety net, if you can work part-time somewhere, you can work at a job that's, you know, where there's not a lot of brain power required. So you can kind of do your side hustle on the side, or you have that friend like I had, I'd say that's a great formula for it. But the end result, or even just forget the result, just the process of every day waking up and trying to, you know, figure out how do I grow this thing and how do I move this forward is a really fun challenge.
Nice. So Tom, what do you wish I would have asked you? Is there anything else that you want to make sure that people take away that I haven't thought to touch on?
I don't think so. I mean, knowing your audience, the way you talked about it before, it's all about having the confidence of doing it. There's a lot of fear that comes into it. In fact, that's a lot of the topic that I'm leaning into with my talks moving forward is fear. I think fear is the number one motivator in the world. It's what holds people back from making good decisions. It's what holds people back from taking leaps that could really benefit their future. It's something that you got to get over, the fear of what people think, you know, when you go out on your own. And I've even addressed it already, the fear of leaving your cushy job for a startup. It doesn't have to be that stark. The way I viewed it was, okay, worst case scenario, I fall on my face. My friend who paid me the salary fires me in a year. My business fails and all that happens. Now what? Well, I just go back and get my job again from some other company. Maybe they'll pay me a little less than I was making before, but maybe more. Like, that's my worst case scenario. You know, barring a Great Depression style, no one's hiring anybody. Like, there, I was fine. I would have been able to get employed somewhere else again. So that's really your worst case scenario. It's not poverty. I think people are too scared sometimes to make those leaps.
It's true. Yeah. Like, if I leave this job, no one will ever hire me again. Well, come on. Is that really true? Like, you couldn't go back and get some kind of a job that would at least pay your bills and pay your mortgage or whatever. So yeah. Good point. Just do it. Just do it. Best advice / logo or tagline ever said, right?
Right.
Awesome.
Right.
So Tom, what's the best place for people to reach you or get the book, or, you know, what's your best contact?
There's a bunch of them. So I think for this crowd, you know, the book's on Amazon. It's Permission to Spend by Tom Wall. So that's on Amazon and all the formats. You can find me at permissiontospend.com. So that's all, and also mostly about the book, but there's some contact information in there as well. But you can also reach me directly if you want to at tom@tomwalltalks.com. I'd be happy to connect. And I'm on social media in various places as well.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much for being with us today. You know, I have to be honest, when I saw like a little bit of info on when I was reading it on my way back from the gym, I was like, oh, another financial planner. I don't want to talk to another financial planner, but you're different. You're cool. I like talking to you.
Yeah. And I'm not a financial planner. I just
exactly.
Coach them.
Exactly. That was a nice surprise.
Glad I could help.
Awesome. So thank you so much. And thank you, listener, for listening. And, you know, I know you're not going to like think to yourself, oh, I know 15 financial planners that I can, you know, that would love to hear from Tom, but maybe, you know, one person, or maybe you just have somebody who needs to buy the book or at least hear the message and start to understand and think about their strategy, or even to hear Tom's words about just do it, go be an entrepreneur. Somebody needs that little push. So please forward this episode to them, and we'll see you next week.